Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast, where you can expect cutting-edge information and strategies relating to success mindset, leadership, wealth creation, and relationships, all based in universal law and David Nagel's own experience as he rose from minimum wage forklift driver to multi-million dollar business owner. So, let's go.
Hey everyone, it's David Nagel. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. And today we are going to talk about sales. I have had a ton of questions come in from listeners that wanted me to address the topic of sales, specifically how to overcome objections and how to reframe higher prices. So that's kind of where I'm going to focus in today. I think that you're going to get a lot out of this. I want you to know that if you're seeking further information on this topic, we do a seminar called The Psychology of Sales, where we go into this in great depth over a period of a couple of days. And you can reach out to Sarah at davidnagel.com. Or just click onto our website and send something to info or support at davidnagel.com, and we'd be happy to get you information on the next one, which I believe is going to be coming up this fall, something like that, around that time. I'm not sure of the dates. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about the psychology around this first, because I think it's extremely important that in order for a person to be effective at sales, and I think that as a skill set, everybody should master it. It is one of the things that gives a person real freedom in their life, because when you master this skill set, when you master the skill set of sales, you are mastering a skill set that will allow you to become financially free and not financially dependent upon any employer or basically anyone else in your life, because it can be applied to anywhere that sales is relevant, whether you're in your own business or if you're even you're working for somebody else. And generally, salespeople are the highest paid people in the world when you really think about it. So the idea first is to get our mind right around sales. It was once told to me by my mentor. He said to me, and this is when I was having trouble with sales a little bit myself, even though I had been in it for a long time, or I should say in and out of it for a long time in various different aspects. He said to me, understand this, sales is not something you do to someone, it's something that you do for them. And when he said that, it was one of those life-changing moments. It totally changed my paradigm and any internal conflict that I had going on, you know, around the idea of sales. Because I think that for the most part, people are raised with a lot of cautionary tales around salespeople all of their life. And, you know, a lot of it's actually justified. I mean, there's a lot of really screwy sales ideas that are out there, and a lot of it has to do with, yeah, there are some con people out there, but there's also, and what I think is in a way that makes it worse, is that you have companies that what they do is they put amount of a certain, you know, like a salesperson has to make a certain amount of sales every week or every month or whatever it might be. So is that a bad thing? No, not from a company perspective, because you have to have some kind of a way to set a goal, meet a goal, make sure that people are consistently growing. But if the person that you're doing this with, the salesperson that you're doing this with has not mastered sales or doesn't like sales, what you end up with then is the pushy salesperson. You end up with the salesperson that is just selling to make a sale. And this is not, I don't think that that's ethical, number one. And I don't think that it's in the best interest of the salesperson, and I don't think it's in the best interest of the person that you're selling something to. Here's what my belief around sales is. Sales is something that we do for someone who has a problem or a need or a want or a desire, and we're helping them get clear in their mind as to whether or not they want to purchase what you have to offer. So in essence, every sale is actually solving some kind of a problem for another individual. So I don't believe we take away another person's choice for anything in life. And the idea with sales is that you help a person get clear in their mind as to whether or not they want to buy or they don't want to buy. Now, when a salesperson is coming from a place of lack in their own understanding, when they have not developed their sales skill set to a really confident and productive place, what ends up happening is that they're communicating horribly to their prospective client or prospect or whatever it is that you want to call that person, because in the back of their mind, what's running around is, I need to make this sale. I need to be able to pay my rent. I need to be able to pay my bills. It's coming from I need, instead of two things that really should determine the sale. So you might want to just write this down. What should determine whether or not a sale is made? So you have people that are selling a product, and you have people that are selling a service, and sometimes you have people that are selling both. So the idea is that, number one, the person that you're attempting to make a sale with is that they have a need for the product or the service. Number two is that they have the ability to pay for the product or the service. Now, if you're coming from, if you have that understanding, then you know you're talking to someone for whatever reason has not made a decision to buy, because obviously they still have whatever need in their life or problem that needs to be solved, but you're talking to the right person. Okay, if we really understand how to sell, the next phase of that conversation is getting to them to the point where they're clear about whether they say yes or no. So if we're approaching this first from, let's say that whatever it is that we're selling is actually a solution to a problem. For instance, just about everything that I sell is a solution to somebody else's problem. If we understand psychologically that a problem is where there's confusion or ignorance going on in the mind, One of the strategies of the subconscious mind is to keep a person in confusion or to keep a person in ignorance, where your subconscious mind will literally create a blind spot where you cannot literally see or conceptualize what is going on around you so that you can't get to the solution. And the reason that it does this is when we're facing something that's unknown. So our subconscious mind's main job is to keep us alive. That's what it is. And as long as something is not killing us in the moment, like we're in the fight or flight area of our brain, then what happens is that it says, I don't know that what this is. I don't know that this is good for us. This could hurt us. It could be a threat. I don't know. So it is not going to let you take in the information. So it causes this confusion. And also the other thing that can cause confusion is whether or not the person is willing to do whatever is required to make the purchase for what it is that they want, which I'm going to get into in a little bit. That's where the idea of urgency comes in as to how important is it that the person purchase whatever it is that you're offering at this time, which also then leads to the objections, which I'm going to show you how to handle in a minute. So what we really want to do here is we want to help a person get their thinking clear Because that's the whole deal when it comes to sales. There's an old saying, I don't know where it came from, but whoever said it, it was a brilliant idea. A confused mind never buys. If we're in confusion as the salesperson because we need the sale, because we have to meet our sales manager's quota or our business's quota or whatever it is, and we're not master salespeople, then we're actually sending a confused vibration or energetic signal to the prospective client, and they pick up on that. And when they pick up on that, they have an automatic energetic reaction that shows up emotionally, but then it even confuses their thinking even more, which really hurts us in the long run, because here we are trying to help the potential client become clear as to why they should buy or if they should buy, and yet we're sending out a confusing message. In psychological circles, they call that a double binding message. So that means basically we communicate through words, gestures, and writing if we're making a sales presentation, whether it's on the phone or face-to-face or from the stage or however we're doing it. It could be even email or advertising or marketing. It's always words, gestures, and writing. But subconsciously, we're sending off this this other energy. And the energy is coming from some kind of lack. So it could be coming from, I need the sale because I need the money. It could be coming from, don't reject me because I can't stand rejection. If a person rejects me in sales, I take it personally. Like, it's not that it's just not for them, that there's something actually wrong with me. So that's something like emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, a master salesperson has to overcome and heal those wounds inside of them, that they need that love and appreciation from the other person, and they can't deal with the rejection. One of the greatest freedoms in life is not being, getting to the place, the developmental place, the spiritually and emotionally mature place where rejection does not hurt us. And there'll be people out there that'll tell you that, you know, you're a human being, rejection is always gonna hurt. That's BS. It does not have to. Once you get clear in your mind that the rejection has nothing to do with you, it really doesn't when you come to think about it. If somebody's rejecting, or there's the appearance that they're rejecting you or something that it is that you're offering, does that really have anything to do with you? No, it has everything to do with them and whatever they're perceiving. If you let it define you, then it becomes a major energetic problem. It becomes a self-confidence problem, which then turns into a self-image problem, and you end up with a salesperson who procrastinates. They can't pick up the phone. They know they need to pick up the phone. They can't do their marketing. They know they need to do their marketing. And it's all an avoidance of experiencing this pain. So we have to get ourselves right in order to be really good at this. And one of the things that most people that I work with, when I work with a lot of people around sales, because I help entrepreneurs build businesses, and this is one of the major issues that just about every one of them has, getting them through this point, what they're really shocked by is that when they begin to master it, they actually get more authentic appreciation than they ever thought that they would before. And I experienced that myself. When I first started selling in the industry that I'm in, I would literally get handwritten letters from people thanking me for selling them into a seminar or a course that changed their life, because I was their first open door to being able to, for them to step through and actually make a decision to make a change. I was shocked. I never imagined in a million years somebody would send me a letter and say, thank you for selling me into something, especially when it was something that was expensive. But it actually happened, and it happened many, many times, and it continues to this day. So being really solid in your own psychology, your own emotional issues around sales, and then mastering the skill set around sales is the next piece. So let's talk about that a little bit. There are two kinds of sales out there. There is a sale where people need what you have, whatever it is, your product or services. And there is this sale where people want what you have, what your product or service is. Now, the interesting thing is, so I'll make it look like this. Let's say that you open your refrigerator and you realize you're out of bottled water or you're out of milk or you're out of salad or meat or whatever. You know that those are things that you want. Nobody has to try to convince you. Nobody has to sell you on it. You go, you get in your car, you go to the grocery store. You know what you want. You buy the food that you want. You don't have somebody there generally saying, here's all the benefits of this milk or here's all the benefits of this juice or whatever. I mean, I know that there's like tasting stations and stuff in grocery stores now, but generally you don't have somebody telling you that here's why you need to buy a loaf of bread, right? You know you want the loaf of bread. You go in and you buy the loaf of bread. So that's a want, right? Going out and buying a car, generally that's a want. Going out and buying yourself clothes, generally that's a want. Are they needs in our life? Yeah, they're needs in our life, but we already know why we need them, so there's no further explanation required. We know that we want them, and we go out and we just buy it. And what's important about this is to understand that that is a decision and an acceptance of that decision by the person who's purchasing. Nobody's telling them that they have to go to the store and buy a loaf of bread. They know that they do, and they want to go do it, okay? But when you're selling something that a person needs but doesn't necessarily want, it's totally different. Because what has to happen is that in their mind, you need to turn the need into a want first before you're going to make the sale. Now, I realize that there's people out there that get other people to buy emotionally, where they're not turning the need into the want. What they're really selling is the potential outcome only, without a person completely understanding what it is that they're purchasing, and a person goes into an emotional buy. But when you do that, when you become that kind of salesperson, you generally end up with a lot of people that have buyer's remorse. You have people that have that want refunds. You have people that will not actually use your product because there really was no conscious thought about what they're buying. Now, there's a lot of old school people that believe that that's how you should sell. I do not. And I know what the ramifications are of it. It creates chaos in your business. There's no stability in your sales. And in turn, I think that it psychologically affects the salesperson because you're going out and you're making three sales, but you're refunding two of them. So it's this roller coaster that you can't seem to get off of. And there's it's not sending a signal to your subconscious mind that you've actually mastered this. You know you can go out and do it at any time. And financially, you're going to be set for life because you have this skill set. If you do it in the way that I'm going to teach you here in a couple of minutes, your mind will rewire itself completely different, and it will become a confident skill that you can then take out into the world, and you will know for the rest of your life that you're never going to have to worry about money because you have the single skill set that generates money and brings it into your life. The only thing in the world that moves money, in other words, from one person's hand to another person's hand, is sales. Even if you say to me, David, loan me $20, and I give you the $20, that's a sale, okay? The only thing that moves money is sales. And the money is used as an extension for everything that we can't do personally in our life. It allows us to be more comfortable, and it also allows us to extend our service beyond our physical presence. So it's very important to really understand factually what these things really are, what their place is, and how important it is. I believe money is one of the most important things in the world. And that's not coming from some kind of pretentious, wealthy mindset. It's coming from a very realistic perspective. If you look all around the world and you see where there is no money and the damage that occurs because of that, and you look at places where money is really based on greed and the damage that occurs because of that, what you're seeing are two polar opposite extremes, but you're not actually seeing an awareness of what money really is. When you see people that have a very solid awareness of what money is, what it's used for, that there's an abundance of it, and that they've actually mastered it, you don't see any of the bullshit that you see on those two extremes, and sometimes in the middle too. So let's talk about objections, okay? So I could speak to you for an entire day just on objections alone. But objections come when the mind is not clear about actually saying yes to the sale itself. And the thing is that there can be various reasons for this. One reason could be is that you have to be aware one of the most difficult things for a human being to do is to tell another human being no. It's weird, but it's really true. And we've become a very codependent society because we have not learned to tell other people no. Now, I could go into a whole teaching about that also. And, it really stems from the way we were mirrored as children, and we weren't allowed to set our own boundaries with our parents. We weren't allowed to like and dislike the things that we want and give voice to that. But what it ends up leading to, you know, for an adult has a really hard time saying no for a lot of things to another person. So when you're in a situation where, you know, you're having this conversation with somebody and everything seems to be going great within the sales conversation, but they give you an objection, you have to consciously know in your mind and ask yourself, is this person just trying to tell me no, but they can't? So they're giving me an objection with the idea that they don't want to do this, but they don't know how to say no. And I'll show you how to uncover that in just a second. Or is this objection basically a challenge in their mind? So here's what I mean by this. So let's say you're selling something. The person loves it. They really want to do it. They have a need for it. They now want to do it, but they don't know how they can, because they have something in their life that they see as preventing them from being able to purchase. So what could those things be? Well, one of the obvious ones could be lack of money. They don't have enough money to be able to do it. So you also need to understand that that is coming from ignorance. When you see that show up, they don't know that they don't know that they have the ability to earn this money. They have the ability to get the money if really have enough urgency to do so. It's just in this moment in their mind that seems to be a block or an obstacle. So the whole idea is that you're coming from a place where you help them to be able to clearly see beyond that and conceptualize how they can versus why they can't. Another reason could be that they don't have enough time. Of course, everybody has the same 24 hours in every day, and everybody's 24 hours is completely booked. I don't care if you're just sitting on the couch watching TV and eating Doritos. Everybody's day is booked with something. So in order to bring something else into another person's life, it has to become a higher priority than whatever it is that they're currently doing, so that they're willing to remanage their life in order to purchase your product or your service. Another big objection would be that my spouse won't let me buy it, or my spouse won't let me do it. Well, I am in the self-improvement and the professional development industry, so to speak, and I run across this on a regular basis. I can understand from the perspective if the spouse disagrees and the money is handled jointly, But your responsibility to yourself comes first. And the question then becomes, how can you earn the money or get the money for you without touching the money that's agreed upon within the relationship? So that's how that excuse is dealt with. But really, when it comes down to it, there's really only a handful of different excuses. There's not that many. It's that people perceive that there's more because there's always a myriad or a million different stories that go behind the excuse. So you have to ask yourself, what excuse or obstacle am I really hearing here if it's kind of vague and it's wrapped into some kind of an emotional story? The other thing is that when that happens, you do not want to step into their story. You do not want to step into their reality of why they can't. You have to champion being the person that is going to stand outside of the story, compassionately hear their story, but also help walk them into your reality of life as to why they can do something, especially if we're talking about selling something that is going to have a major impact on a person's life, their future, or you know, whatever is going on with them right now. So let's deal with the first one first. Let's say you're looking to find out if the person's telling you the truth. So let's say a person's objection is, I would love to do this, I'm excited, I'm enthusiastic, this is really cool, and I don't have any money. I would say to them, is it that you don't have any money or you don't have the money for this? Now, what this is called is a split question. And the reason that we're asking a split question is because if they are lying, and I'm not trying to make the person wrong here, but if they are lying because they don't have the ability to say no, we need to find out what the real problem is before we can deal with it. If a person lies to you in a sales conversation, in the form of an objection, and you believe it, you don't realize that they're lying, we start going down a rabbit hole trying to help them fix their problem, and it causes even greater confusion and frustration because it's not really their problem. So usually the way those conversations end is, well, let me think about it, call me back in a week. Let me ponder this, let me talk to my spouse, let me talk to my attorney, let me talk to my accountant, you know, call me back in a few days. And what they're just trying to do is to get you off the phone because they can't think of another lie to tell you. But if you ask a split question, what happens is that you're asking a question, everybody is already programmed to answer a question, so we don't need to think about the idea of answering. Like, if somebody asks you a question, you don't think to yourself, do I really want to answer this question? Most of the time, you just answer it because you're programmed to answer the question. If you ask a split question when a person is lying, it becomes very difficult for them to think about another lie versus giving the two opposite ideas that you're presenting in their mind at that time. They're generally going to answer the one truthfully because the mind can't think in several different directions simultaneously, even though a lot of times we think it can. It's just that we can move back and forth really quickly. So the question again would be, is it that you don't have any money or is it that you just don't have the money for this? Well, if the person says, well, I don't have any money, then my response would be, okay, how do you eat? How do you pay your light bill? How do you pay your automobile bill? How do you pay your rent? You know, how is it that you're surviving if you don't have any money? You're not homeless. So what really comes down to the truth then at that point is that they don't, in their mind, they don't have the money for this, which, yes, can be a verifiable obstacle. But then the question becomes, how can we get the money from this? So when a person has bought into the idea all of their life that they don't have the money for certain things, which is really a middle-class mindset issue, they become unresourceful in their thinking when you get to this point of the conversation. So our job at that point is to help them become resourceful in their thinking. So then we can go, how can we get the money? Do you know someone that you can borrow it from? Can you put it on credit cards? Do you have it in savings? Do you have it in a retirement plan? Is there a way for us to create a plan to earn this money? So you can run down all different kinds of scenarios as to where we can find this money. And many, many times you'll run into, you'll make a suggestion and the person will go, huh, you know what? Yeah, I do have money in savings and it was earmarked for something else. I never really thought about using it for this, but actually this is more important right now. So I'm going to go use it for this. We've made millions of dollars off that idea alone, because it helps a person become more resourceful. So again, it is about helping a person become more resourceful when you reach an objection and figuring out whether or not the objection is the real objection, getting to the real objection, and then helping them solve that problem. And if you can do that and you have the right person and you have the right urgency for the person to buy, you're gonna make a good sale. You're gonna have a really solid sale on your hands. So the last topic that I wanted to discuss on this is the person that sent in the questions about this said, how do we reframe higher prices? So I think the idea when we're talking about reframing higher prices, a lot of times people will say, why would somebody spend that much money for something? So it's pretty well known that I charge six figures and above for personal coaching, and basically there's a waiting list to get into our personal coaching. But somebody that's never really been in it, or they don't know me, or they just heard of me by somebody else, they may say, well, why would somebody spend that kind of money to do that? So obviously what's happening is that in their mind, they do not see the benefit or the potential outcome of what that coaching would actually do for them. And this really can apply to just about anything. It doesn't have to be coaching. It could be a car, it could be a house, it could be whatever the person's purchasing in their life. It is a dollar amount that they are not used to spending. So always remember this rule. Whenever you're charging a price that a person is not using to spend, they have bought before at, sorry, that's a little confusing. You have to understand this. In their mind, they're comparing it to something. Now, what does that mean? So if you charge $100,000 for something, most people have not spent $100,000 on anything but maybe a house. Okay, so their mind goes, when they hear this, what our mind does is it looks for something similar in order to create value or conceptualization as to why it is that I should buy this so that I can see the benefit. But if the only thing that I've ever paid $100,000 for or more is a house, then the actual benefit of the purchase does not match up in our mind. So we're not actually evaluating what it is that we're purchasing from the actual real benefit of whatever the product or service brings into our life. So here is how, if you're in this kind of sales, here's how you determine value, okay? The value is really based on the effect of using the product or service in the person's life. Like, what is the ultimate outcome? Is it going to make them more money? Is it going to save them more money? Is it going to change their way of life? Because if you really think you can basically put a financial value on just about anything these days, so you have to, for whatever your product or service is, you have to determine what is that impact that is going to be created in that person's life, and then you can ethically raise your prices at least up to that impact, sometimes more. And I'll give you an example. So one of the things that I'm known for is helping people become millionaires. And if I said I'm going to charge you $125,000 and I will teach you how to become a millionaire in 12 months, okay? You will literally have that, you will literally have that outcome in 12 months if you do everything that I tell you to do. Is that a fair trade? Is that, is there an ethical and moral value to that outcome? Well, absolutely. Number one, just from the standpoint of the fact that I'm going to teach you a skill set that after I teach that to you, you don't ever need me again. You can go out and do that over and over and replicate that for the rest of your life, right? The question is, how much can I ethically charge for that? I can do $100,000, I could do $120,000. Could I ethically charge $1 million to do that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Really think about this. Would it not be worth spending $1 million to learn how to earn $1 million? Now, don't go to in your head thinking, yeah, but I don't have $1 million. How would I get the million? Don't go there. That's not the question. The question is, would that be a fair sale? And I still say it's totally a fair sale, because then you can go do it on your own and you don't need me. Right? So when at whatever product or service it is that you're selling, you have to ask yourself, what is the outcome for the client, okay? And what is the financial relativity to that outcome for that client? And then you can raise your prices to that place. But you also have to make a person aware of the fact that here's why paying you this much for whatever your product or service is well worth it. Now, I'll say one more thing about this. When you're selling, you should be asking questions more than you're telling people about your product and service, because that's what help a person get to the place where they're clear in their mind about why or why not they want to buy from you. And it shouldn't make any difference to you as to whether they say yes or no. Your job is to get them to the place where they can clearly say yes or clearly say no. Because in every business, sales is a number game. I don't care what business you are in the world, it's always more no's than it is yeses. Think about a company like McDonald's, right? Every car that drives by and goes to Wendy's, it's a no, right? It's a no. And there's more cars that drive by that don't go into McDonald's than actually do go into McDonald's. If you look at like Apple or Amazon, they may be some of the biggest companies in their industry, but still more people don't buy from them than actually do buy from them. So no is not a bad thing. You can become extraordinarily wealthy on the yeses that you do get. Don't worry about the no's, because that's just part of the game. Anyway, I hope that this podcast has been giving you something to really think about. I hope it helps you sharpen your sales skills a little bit. Remember that we do have a program called The Psychology of Sales, where we get into every bit of selling and how to become really proficient at it. So definitely check us out if that's something that you're looking for. But until then, just keep practicing, keep working on it, and you will become a great salesperson. One of the top skill sets a person can want in their life. All right, this is David Nagel. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one. Have a great day, guys. Bye. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Successful Mind Podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned, and while you're there, leave us a review. I read them all. I'd love to connect with you on social media. My pages are also listed in the show notes, and if you'd like to continue learning with me, go to davidnagel.com/start here for a free download. Until next time, make it a great week.